morning's scripture reading will be from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 through 8, and I'll be reading out of the NIV. And now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails.
I heard one time about a woman that was telling the story of Snow White to her daughter. And she got through the point about the evil witch presenting her with the apple. And Snow White, seeing that it was pleasing, took it and fell into a deep sleep. And of course, then the prince came and gave her a kiss and she woke up. And the mother asked the daughter, "Do you remember what happened next?" And the daughter said, "Of course. They lived happily ever after." And the father, who was in the room behind the paper, was heard mumbling, "No, they didn't. They got married." That one's for the men. Here's another story I heard of two newlyweds. And right after they got married, the extremely naive husband said, "Honey, if you don't mind, now that we're married, I'd like to point out a few imperfections that I see in you." And the wife, ever so sweetly, said, "That's totally fine. It's because of those imperfections that I couldn't have got a better husband." That was for the women. This day after Valentine's Day, I think those stories bring a couple points to mind that I'd like to remind us. To the husbands out there this morning, your wives are humans. And because they're humans, they are imperfect. And because they are imperfect, they will bring problems into your marriage. To the wives out there this morning, your husbands are humans. Because they're humans, they are imperfect. And because they're imperfect, they will bring problems to your marriage. To all of the couples out there this morning, and to all of the soon-to-be couples, God is not human. God is God. God is perfect. And if you include him in your marriage, you will have much less problems. Now you'll notice I didn't say you won't have any problems. Because really it comes down to simple math. You add a positive to two negatives, and you're just a little more positive. You still have some negatives there because you have two negatives that are involved. And they're not perfect. But God can make it more perfect. And if you work with your spouse, and if you work with God, you can turn your negatives, the problems that you bring into the marriage, into things that are more positive. And your marriage can be a very positive thing. In Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter, we find this passage. "There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. "For whom am I toiling?" he asked. "And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. Two are better than one, because they have good return for their work. If one falls down, the other can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. But a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken." When we include God in our marriage to be that third strand, we are a mighty team. People have a hard time putting us asunder. This morning I'd like to look at a few, comments on marriage and treating your spouse correctly after this Valentine's Day. And I want to look at an intriguing verse in Genesis chapter 4, verses 1. And I'm reading out of the King James on this one because it says it the way I wanted to say it. "And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, 'I have gotten a man from the Lord.'" Adam knew Eve his wife. How old were you when you first figured out what "knew" meant? It made, changed your whole view of conversation, didn't it? When you figured out what "knew" meant? It did for me when I finally realized what it meant. People would come up and say, "Did you know so-and-so? I'm only 9! The whole conversation was just different to me from that point forward. I didn't understand. And I was thinking about, I couldn't think of any other word, any other verb, that there has probably been more synonyms written about. How many other words could we put in place for there? I was thinking about asking my dad when he went to work to have all his friends at work write a list of every other kind of word you could possibly think of that we could put in for that place. Of course, I couldn't read that list this morning, could I? Think about it. Is there any other verb that has so many synonyms written about it? But what a good word it is. "New." What does that mean? That means more than what people try to think this means. I know her. He knew her. What a great word for that. I read a stat the other day that just blew my mind. On television last year, whenever there was a sexual relation depicted or implied on television, 98% of the time, they were not married. Maybe that doesn't blow your mind. That blew my mind. 98% of any type of sexual relation that was implied on TV was between people that weren't married. That's amazing. And that's a myth. That's not even true. That is not true. More sex that occurs in this world is between married people than not. Easy. It's simple math. But that is what that's the way the world shows us that happened. You have sex and then you get married. And then you stop. According to TV, only 2% of people that are having sex are married people. That's amazing. And we know that's not true. We just read the verse. Adam and Eve got married and then they started raising Cain. Tough crowd this morning. Dave, I think it was Dave the other day, was talking about some song, by Paul Simon or something. We were supposed to try to figure out what the rest of the word was. When I was doing this talk this morning, I thought of a song by The Doors. See if you can end this one. "Hello, I love you." What's next? "Won't you tell me your name?" Isn't that society? "Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name?" I love you. How do you love them? You don't even know them. You don't even know them. How well do you know your spouse this morning? Husbands, if I ask you to take out a piece of paper and write down on a piece of paper, what is the number one concern on your wife's mind right now? What is she really thinking about? What is really bothering her right now? Could you do that? You have a better chance today because yesterday was Valentine's Day. But if I asked you 6 months from now, could you do it again? Wives, what's on your husband's mind? What's the number one concern they're thinking about? How well do you know them? Our problem is that love somehow gets thought of as a noun. And that's not what it is. Love is a verb. It's an action. It's something you work at. You try to accomplish it. You try to improve it. There's several phrases that I really don't like. Little pet phrases that I hear all the time, and I really don't like them. How did you meet? Oh, it was love at first sight. No, it wasn't. That doesn't happen. It's impossible. Love is not at first sight. I saw them and I loved them. I knew them. I knew everything about them. That's impossible. I'm more impressed with people that say, it's been love after 50 years. It's still love. That's impressive. Love at first sight is not impressive. Everybody thinks that happened to them. That hasn't happened to anybody. We just fell in love. We just fell in love. The people that just fell in love, you know what happens to those people? They fall out of love later. Because love's just a bowl. And they're walking around the side. And they just fell in, accidentally fell in together. And when something comes along and rocks that bowl just a little bit's all it takes, they fall out. Because that's what love is to them. It's a noun. It's just something. We can fall in, we can fall out. But if love is a verb, if you are acting upon it, working on it, trying to think, how can I make it better? You can't fall out of it. This is not what happens with marriages. Marriages aren't like a tire blowing out. Marriages end because of a slow leak. It's something that's imperceptible. You might not even notice it's happening. Because you're not paying attention. You're not seeing, do we have a slow leak? Or is there something I can do to patch this up and increase the love? It's work. It's work. 1 Corinthians 13, which was read this morning, shows this. Love is patient. It's being patient with each other. Love is kind. Are you kind to your spouse? How many times are we kind to total strangers, and then we can say some of the harshest things to our spouse that we would never dare say to our grandmother or to a stranger? We treat them better sometimes. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It's not rude. We're not rude to each other, are we? It is not self-seeking. It's not about what I get out of this relationship. It's about what my spouse gets out. It's not easily angered. I really like this one. It keeps no record of wrongs. Do you keep a record of what your spouse has done? Stop pointing at your wife, Kelly. Do you keep a record? When you do something wrong and they say, you know, that really kind of hurt my feelings, you can say, well, yeah, but what about all the things you did to me back here in 1994 and 1990? Do we do that? That's a hard thing, right? We keep records sometimes. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. I like that one. Perseveres. There's a lot of talking about persevering in the scriptures, but usually it's what? It's about persecution. Why would love have to persevere? Is marriage like persecution? I hope not. To some people, I think it is. But we persevere. It's not always easy. We persevere and we work through those things. Love will never fail. Love will never fail if you are doing it right. Every night for 16 years, I have told my wife I love her when we go to bed. I'm not bragging about that. But every night we go to bed, I say I love you. Now there are some nights when I go to bed and I don't say that probably in the spirit that I probably should be saying it. There are nights after heated discussion and she's already went off to bed quickly and I come in and I get in and I put my back to her and I throw the covers over and we do a little tug of war thing on who's getting the covers. And there are several minutes of silence and then I say, I still love you. I've not missed a night. I have not missed a night. But there are moments when I say it with much more meaning and feeling. And there are moments when I say it and I just want her to know that right now I really don't like you. But tomorrow I probably will. And I want you to know that I still love you. That's important. That's persevering. It's persevering when the times aren't as easy. Because we go through things that aren't easy. But boy, they're so much easier when we're together. So much easier when we're together. And especially when we have God with us. It takes work. It takes work. The other point I want to make this morning is that it takes understanding our roles. It takes understanding our roles. And this is, I don't know where this came from. I don't know if it came from the feminist movement or from the Islam faith on what roles are in society. But somewhere along the line, the world has confused things and has tried to rearrange God's plan. God made several creations. He made snakes. He made rabbits. He made cats. He made dogs. He made women. He made men. He even created angels. Those are all distinct creations. They all have different functions. They all have different roles. They all have different things they can do. One doesn't become the other. This is never the plan. And this has never happened. But this is the way the world thinks. The world talks about evolution, how one thing can evolve into something else. We have ideas that somehow we die and we become angels. Even though Jesus says you don't become angels. You become somewhat like them, but you are a different creation. I created you as human. I created angels as angels. You don't have one become the other. That's my job. I'm the creator. I don't make one all of a sudden become something else. A cat does not aspire to be a dog. A cat doesn't try to be a dog. A dog surely doesn't aspire to be a cat. Women are women. You have an important, extremely important role. Men are men. You have an extremely important role. You do your role. Women do your role. And your marriage will be amazingly blissful. The world has ruined this. The world has ruined this and has changed things around. I'd like to just look at one real quickly here. 1 Corinthians 12. I'm going to take this completely really out of context. But it says, now, because it's talking about the church, but now the body is not made up of one part, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has arranged the parts in the body, every one of them, just as He wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? This is referring to the church, but I think we can refer it to our marriage. God planned for certain things to be that way, and if everybody fulfills the role to the best of their ability, the marriage, the body, works. But if we don't, if we say, well, I'm not an eye, or if I say I'm an eye and you're just an ear, we have problems. We have to each function according to our roles. I hear some other sayings. Marriage is a give and take. Marriage is 50-50. No, it's not. It's not 50-50. My marriage would not work if Ginger only gave 50% to it. My marriage wouldn't work if I only gave 50% to it. My marriage wouldn't work if Jesus, if Ginger gave some and then took some. My marriage works because my wife gives 100%. That's why it works. My marriage works because I give 100%. I don't ask to take something. I don't expect her to give me 50%. I give. It's 100%, 100%. Give, give. That's the way it works. These phrases that the world have put on are incorrect. There's another story I heard of a man and a woman. They're engaged to be married. And the woman was looking at the man's father and was just amazed. Well, your father does everything for your mother. Brings her breakfast in bed. Opens a door for her. Brings her gifts all the time. Boy, I hope this runs in your family, she says to him. And he says, it does. But I take after my mother. It's 100%. Everybody gives to it. We can't just have someone's just everybody's doing all the giving and someone's just doing all the taking. Everybody gives to the marriage. In Ephesians, and I'm going to go over a little bit. I have to. I got to get to this passage. This is like the crux of the talk. So, Ephesians, the fifth chapter, we have some, I think, amazing words. In verse 22 through 24, it talks about the wives. I counted them. There's 51 words there. 51 words talking to the wives. In verse 25 through 31, it's talking to the husbands. There are 102 words there. I don't know if there's any significance in there that it took twice as much to convince the husbands about their role as it did the women. But maybe we should maybe put some significance on that and think about that, men. Because these are what the roles are. In verse 22 it says, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. And boy, do we just really hate that verse, don't we? What an evil word, submit. Now who's that talking about to submit? It's saying wives, submit. Is that saying husbands force submission on them? No, it's saying wives, give of yourself. Submit to him as you would submit to who? Christ. Well, how would you submit to Christ? Let's reverse that. Let's reverse that. Why don't you submit to Christ as well as you submit to your husbands? Does that make you scared? You submit to Christ just as well as you submit to your husbands. That could be a scary thing. Wives, submit to your husbands as the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. What's it say to the husbands? In twice as many words. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Really, it's still talking about the wife a lot, isn't it? How you can make your wife beautiful by your love for her. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. We have different roles here, but how those roles go together. Is it difficult for you to submit? Why is it difficult for you to submit? I don't feel that my wife would say it's difficult to submit. Why? Because I love her. I love her. And the more I love her, the more she finds it easier. The more I love her means I'm going to put more effort into making decisions that with her in mind. What do I think she will like? I get her input. If I have to end up making a decision. Doesn't mean she doesn't make decisions. But sometimes there are decisions I have to make. And I think about how they would impact her. What would she think? What is her views on this? And then when I make a decision and she sees that decision was made with love. He loves me. then it's a lot easier for her to fulfill her role. We see how this works? It's easier for her. Could I submit to Christ? Has he ever shown me that he loves me? It's easy for me to submit to Christ because he showed me how much he loves me. So when I show my wife how much I love her, it's easier for her to submit. And the more humble and gentle, quiet spirit she has, the more I love her, which makes it easier for her to submit and have a gentle, quiet spirit, which makes it easier for me to love her. And it's great. That's how it works. That's what the roles were meant for. There's nowhere in the scriptures that it tells a man, make your woman submit. That's not in here. The world thinks it is. It's not. The command is to the women. You humble yourself. You show this spirit for your husband. And he will love you. This is the way it's supposed to work. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6 would be the last passage I want to look at. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. I'll try to read this. This is tough for me to read. I love this passage. This is more to the women. We get some more for the women here on this submission thing because it's such an issue. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands so that if any of them do not believe the word. Well, how'd that happen? How does she get in a relationship where she's with someone that doesn't believe? I think we have enough other passages, and I'm not going to go there this morning, that when you're getting married, you need to think about making sure that God is the third one in there, which means both of you should be in there. And there's plenty of passages we can go for that. I'm not going to even start that argument, because if you're going to argue with me on that, you're wrong. Because I can show you the passages that talks about that we need to try to be equally yoked together. How did they get in this situation? They got in this situation because of what Jesus said. I come and I'm going to bring family against family. Husband's going to be against wife. How come? Because during this time, some people accepted, some people didn't. A woman could find herself accepting this and the man not. And could find herself in this situation. Now if we find ourselves in a situation today, then with this verse, these verses still apply. These verses still apply. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. Without words by the behavior of their wives. When they see the purity and reverence of your lives, your beauty should not come forth from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. The unfading beauty. Women want to be beautiful. Here's your chance. It's an unfading beauty. Eventually, you're going to be old. You're not going to be as beautiful physically as you have in the past. This is an unfading beauty, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Are the women listening to that? That's a great thing. An unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. This is the way you can win people over. This is the way you can win your husband over if he's not part of the Lord. Now, is it going to happen in your first year of marriage? It might not happen for 50 years of marriage. But husbands, and maybe women don't know this, husbands see what you do. Unless they have no brain whatsoever, they see your actions. They see how you interact with his children. They see how you interact in the church. They see how you interact with others. And if you have a beauty that is unfading, a gentle and quiet spirit, it'll be noticeable. I think of my wife when I read this. I'm very happy that she has an unfading beauty, a gentle and quiet spirit. People are drawn to her. Sometimes I'm amazed by that. Sometimes I'm almost even jealous by that, which I know I shouldn't be because 1 Corinthians 13 said love is not envious. But there's people that are drawn to her, not just in the church, but out in the world. People like to be around her because she makes them feel better. They realize, no, this is just a nice person. There's nice people that are doing good things, and they're doing it quietly and gentle. I think I'm going to embarrass somebody else too. I don't know if she's here or not, but Betty George is an extraordinarily beautiful woman. I think of her when I think of this too. A gentle and quiet spirit. You don't hear Betty say a whole lot of things. But what a gentle and quiet spirit. And how that affects people. I know it's affected her family. We have many beautiful people. That's the problem when I mention out names, because there's so many other names in here I could. Many beautiful women in this congregation. Because of the gentle and quiet spirits that you are just plodding through this journey with. And the effect you're having on those around you, I wish you knew. I wish you knew. Because I think that's the problem. I think a lot of times you just don't know. And husbands, that's your job. Know your wife. Let them know what influence they have. We go to Kelly and Allison's study. We've been going for about a month now on Thursday nights. You know what Ginger and I call that night? We call that date night. Now I know there's other people, probably even in this church, that would think, oh boy, that's a fun date night. I enjoy it. And maybe it's a little joke, but we call it our date night. Because it's the only time where we actually go somewhere by ourselves for a while, anyway, on the drive. And we get to discuss things that we have a common hope with. And then we get to discuss them on the way back home. And it's enjoyable. I drive slow on the way home. It's our date night. And I've said this before, but it's another thing that I enjoy. On Sunday mornings, passing the communion. Passing it to my wife and us both reaching in and partaking of a common hope. And that might be silly, but I can look over her and I can think Jesus loved her too. And we're both saved. And we're together. And we can be together forever. And that's great. I love that. It's a communion that we partake with each other. We want you this morning to be part of the bride. Christ died for you. He showed you unbelievable love. Will you submit to Him? Will you submit to Him? Hopefully, if you submit to Him, then you can, when you have this, the first important institution is the church. The second one is your marriage. And if you have the first one in the correct order that's supposed to be, the second one will fall in line just perfect. If you have God with there in a three-chord strand, then love will never fail. We ask that you join the church as we stand and sing the invitation song.